I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You did it, friends. You made it through May. May, that savage month. The month when the dogs bite harder than any other month. The month when the apes and gorillas drag National Geographic reporters down into the dark, dank weeds of their forbidden jungle and face-sit them into oblivion. May, the month of micrometeorites that go zinging down from the International Space Station, piercing your precious neural networks and creating some awful situation where blood rushes down into all your childhood memories and you're left mumbling in some home for blasted micrometeorite survivors. That's May. May, the month when the birds pluck the beard hair from the old fishermen down by that swampy city near the Forbidden Sea. May, the month where any place is known as a forbidden place. Forbidden meadows, forbidden forests, forbidden streets, forbidden homes, forbidden shanties. It's May, the month when the invisible pinchers of some interdimensional lobster being go piercing through the veil that separates us from the world of death and rend your happy dreams into hamburger meat made of nightmares. Oh, May. This May, so many people didn't make it to June. This May, people were washed away by floods. People were sucked up into cyclonic vortexes and rended apart by powerful winds. May, so many people were lost in avalanches, mine collapses, car crashes, and a variety of other unspeakable calamities. May. You survive May. Go outside and say it. Don't be afraid. Go stand in front of your house and scream to the sky, "I'm alive! I survived May!" And now it's June, and you're free. You're free to do whatever you want. You're free to wander through the worlds as a beggar, a secret saint. You can go searching the vast storehouses of wisdom that exist in the forbidden, things are still forbidden in June, in the forbidden canyons and caverns, or even on the internet. You can turn this June right now into the greatest June of your life. Of course, if you're listening to this in some other month, you still survive May, unless you're in May, in which case, I wish you luck in getting through that terrible dark month. But you did it. That's the whole point. You're alive. You're alive. Can you fucking believe it? Stare at your hand for a second and think about the fact that you're able to move that son of a bitch whenever you want. You can decide to move your hand whenever you want to move your hand. May not seem like a big deal until you consider the fact that you are the evolutionary force that's become aware of itself. If the world wants to dig a hole, there's a lot of lucky things that have to come together for the world to dig a hole. You need some kind of rain, you need some kind of wind, you need some kind of slow geologic process to dig a hole. But you, my friend, you can go right outside and dig a hole with that fleshy little paw of yours. You can do what it takes the earth thousands and millions of years to do in a few seconds. And that's a pretty great thing. So traditionally what we do in June is we go out and we find a nice spot of soil and we dig a hole with our bare hands, and we gaze into that hole, we spit into the hole, we cover up the spit, and we say, "Fuck you, May, this is June, and I'm gonna live this June. This is gonna be the greatest June of my life. This is gonna be the June where I break through the impenetrable, boring fear barrier. I'm gonna smash through that fucking thing. I'm going to worship false idols. I'm going to worship real idols. I'm going to say prayers of joy that go floating up into the heavens. And whether or not they meet electromagnetic clouds of non-thinking, non-loving, disparate quantum phenomena, or whether or not they drift into the ears of sweet baby Jesus, who smiles and sends down rays of joy and glory into my heart, it doesn't matter to me, because I'm in the present moment, and that's what June is all about, existing in the present, never-ending sweetness of being at the very crest of the wave of infinity in the form of a temporary fleshy nodule, a kind of spiritual amphibian, as C.S. Lewis says, part spirit, part matter, being rocketed through time for a very, 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 very small flickering blink, just a few heartbeats, and you're getting shot through June. And friends, this June is going to be the ultimate June. This June is going to be the June where you crack through the cosmic shit egg that's been keeping you from experiencing the never-ending supernatural grin of all the gurus, all the saints, all the gods, all the martyrs, all the rock stars, all the people at this very moment having the most incredible orgasms of their life. You're going to feel it one June night as you lay in your hammock or sit in front of your house or apartment or walk in some park. You're going to feel that unbelievably bizarre strangeness that comes when you realize you could be happy regardless of circumstance, regardless of the turbulence in your life. It doesn't matter what the children of men are telling you to be afraid of. It doesn't matter what the freaks on TV are bellowing about, or which politician, or which flight vanished, or whatever it is that they're trying to bugle their fear horn about. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what just happened to you. It doesn't matter if you just had a rear-end collision with some ominous trucker who's heading in your direction with a crowbar, because this is June, and if you get into the present moment, even then you can find that incredible sweet perfume, that undeniable sense that no matter what ripples go moving through the dimension that you currently exist in the form of undesired phenomena, you can still be eternally happy. And then run from the trucker, run and call 911 and just get out of there. And if you can't run, fight. Go for his jugular, rip it out, pull out his jugular vein, and drink the blood of an angry trucker this June. And as you drink that blood, know that you survived May. All right, guys, we got a great podcast for you. We're going to jump right into it. But first, some very quick beesnals.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time. And lunch does it. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Today's guest is from the Love Serve Remember Foundation. If you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you're familiar with him. He also is the host of the Mind Rolling podcast. And he's a really cool guy, and he's a teacher of mine. So everybody, please welcome the spiritual luminary, the beautiful, sweet being of eternal love and light, who currently calls himself Raghu Marcus. Raghu, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, sir.
We're here in Hawaii again. We're always here in Hawaii. Someone actually told me that it's not a retreat if you never leave the place.
That's true. But we do leave. We leave, and you call me a week later feeling awfully sad and lonely and missing everybody, and wondering why that high you had here is completely crashed and you feel like shit.
It is interesting, isn't it? It seems like it should last the whole year. Goes away.
When I go to India, I'm good for maybe, I can be good for like 6 months maybe. That's how good India is.
These
retreats are good for 6 weeks.
Maybe. How would you describe the feeling that you get from...
I'm just kidding, everybody.
How would you describe the feeling you get from visiting India or from hanging out at these retreats or doing this practice? How would you describe the feeling?
Well, basically what I'm looking for is like a place where at some point I stop thinking about myself as much. And then that there's certain moments, you know, deep moments where there's absolutely no thinking about myself. And a feeling of I'm not thinking past, future either, no time and space. You're completely in the moment. And then if I get really lucky, it'll be filled with that kind of essence-y stuff that we have no word for.
But the people have attempted words for it.
Yeah.
What are some of the words people have attempted to use to describe this state?
The best way I can describe it is not myself. It has to be poetry that really describes the states that one can get in once there's less self-referential stuff. And that is in the mystic poetry from Persia and India. And you know it quite well. And Hafiz would be the very top of that list. I mean, I wish we had a Hafiz book.
Do you have any of them memorized?
No.
You don't memorize?
No, I don't walk around memorizing poetry, for God's sake.
Now, let me just get this, clear this up right now. A few people have commented that when we have these conversations, you seem gruff. And ridiculous thing because...
It is true. Of course it's true.
It's true. But I think people misunderstand, like, your gruffness. They misunderstand when I'm around. It's always shocking to me because when I'm around you, I feel like I'm around a family member, and I love you, and you don't seem gruff at all. And if you are gruff, it's funny to me. So, but I want to talk.
You're the only one, obviously, with these other people are coming to you and saying, what's going on?
But I want to talk about a little bit about the expectation that gets placed on so-called spiritual people. How Ram Dass, you, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, everyone from this satsang, a lot of people place some pretty intense expectations on you guys to behave in a way that they consider to be spiritual. And when you don't meet those expectations, it's not as though, like, when somebody in normal life disappoints another person. Usually it's what you expect. When you guys go anywhere out of the projected expectation of the way a spiritual person is supposed to act, it makes people freak out. Do you feel like you have to act a certain way? Like you have to be more careful at these retreats than you do when you're other places?
By the way, day to day, my wife says to me, after all these years of practice, you're still hauling off?
Yeah.
So it's true. That's all true. At the same time, none of these people that you mentioned, including Ram Dass, is finished. Therefore, there's the day-to-day grist for the mill, as he wrote about, that everything that happens is an opportunity to get awake, period. Right. And I would say that there is a certain benefit to the consistent practice of that, mindfulness, meditation, chanting, whatever you do, yoga. There is a benefit out of that consistency. You stop reacting to your mind stuff quite the same way. So as far as the expectation that people have based on that fact, right?
Yes.
Everybody's projecting their own stuff onto people all the time.
Right.
So if it sticks there, God bless, then it's good, something good for me, you know?
Right.
But mostly it doesn't stick because we're all Ram Dass again, his little poetic thing, we're all walking each other home.
But this is the thing that I sometimes, I don't get it that much, but every once in a while if I sling off some mean tweet just because I'm in a bad mood or whatever, I'm, you know, trolling somebody or whatever, just for fun, so every once in a while there'll be a comment along the lines of, well, 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 look at Mr. Spiritual. Guess you're not so spiritual now, you know, or, yeah. or I have a Mercedes. I lease a Mercedes. It's a fast car. And quite often, because I have leased a Mercedes, not often, but every once in a while, I will get some message from somebody that's like, well, look at what we've got here. I've even seen it. A YouTube, there was an entire YouTube video someone created where they put together me on Joe Rogan's podcast talking about on some anti-materialistic rant. And then they're like, Duncan Trussell bought a $50,000 Mercedes. And which I is not true. I leased it, but still it's an expensive car. So, but I find it very frustrating that people want you to act a specific way that meets their expectations of what a spiritual person or what a person who is interested in meditation or whatever is supposed to act like. But is there a way that you're supposed to act, Raghu? That's the question. When is it?
What are you talking about? What way to act?
Is there a way to act? Is there a right way to be? What is the ethics, the morality? What's the ethical system?
Now you're going to get me into some new ageisms or some be yourself today. I mean, what do you mean?
There you go. I want them. Give me the new
ageism. Be yourself today.
Yeah.
No, what are you talking about? People, if they are not genuine, I don't care who they are. You're talking about spiritual teachers, right?
Yes.
If they're not genuine and anybody encounters them and gets that kind of a thing, they should never go there again.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And if they are genuine and somebody's projecting their shit, like, wow, you got I saw you over there. You got angry. Ooh, I saw you looking at a girl. Oh, whatever it is. If people are doing that with that kind of expectation, the person who's genuine, if it's a genuine teacher, whatever it is they're caught in, they're going to absolutely examine under the microscope of awareness.
Right.
But if it doesn't bounce off them, it won't mean shit.
Right.
What anybody says.
Right.
Most of the teachers you just talked about are absolutely, as well as everything else, humble, and they do not think their shit doesn't smell, and they absolutely are working on themselves every day. That's the key.
So it seems like there's any time you get into the position of being a spiritual teacher, guru, whatever it may be, then and you still find yourself in the terrible predicament of having to sustain yourself somehow. And,
right.
And this is something that Alan Watts talked about. He called himself a spiritual entertainer, is the way he tried to get out of the burden of being a teacher. He called himself a spiritual entertainer, but it seems like there is an expectation for spiritual teachers to be photosynthetic. Like, people expect them to not charge money, to not, there is no, as Ram Dass calls it, going into the marketplace. This is not what is supposed to happen with a spiritual teacher. So another critique I get, and I'm just throwing these critiques out in the beginning just so we can get them out of the way. Another critique that I get, and it's a very rarely, but from time to time, people are like, these retreats in Hawaii, they are so expensive. How are these spiritual people rationalizing charging this amount of money for these retreats? If they're so spiritual, shouldn't we be able to go for free?
I've heard a couple of those myself.
I bet you have.
Yeah. It really all doesn't not boil down to do the best you can. And again, everything that sticks to you, you're definitely going to have to deal with.
Right.
And hopefully transform it, no matter what level of quote-unquote teacherism you are. So and from that point of view, these kind of teachers that you've mentioned are not caught at that level. At the level which you're talking about, these retreats here,
yes,
this is something that directly affects me because of the work with the foundation.
Right.
I can't tell you that the other day, just walking through this campus or this facility, I was thinking, got to be a way to get the price down. But if you look at the facility, you see just how incredible it is,
yes,
and it's pricey.
Yes. You know,
and that's what's dictating the amount of money. It's not the teachers' salaries or any of that. It's the price of the hotel. Well, is it too long? So the thing is, why don't we, for instance, you don't want to get into these details, but you could go to another kind of a facility that wouldn't offer this kind of thing, which seems to be a big part of what people want, that beach right there in front of you.
Great.
Is part of the whole thing, and the way that people can really relax into it. So they are getting their quote-unquote beach time,
yes,
with themselves, which is what people want to get away from their,
that's right,
daily lives. And they're getting this whole other aspect of the teaching. So, yes, it's true, and we are working on it. There's every year more and more people are scholarshiped into this.
Well, it's and that's, to me, the whole thing absolutely makes sense, because I've been here a bunch of times and I know how nice it is. I know how much the place just costs if you come here on your own. It's expensive no matter what, whether it's a retreat or not. But what I think the deeper point I'm trying to get at is people decide, or they don't decide, they just become teachers somehow or another. Ram Dass being one of them, Jack Kornfield being another, but they still have to pay the bills. They still have to figure out a way to make money to live. And that seems like such a terrible predicament to get into, because we don't really have it set up here where there's a priest class. I guess there is a priest class, but
it's a whole church. But, you know, there is an analogy that in the Tibetans particularly, you don't get teachings without dana, without giving something.
Right.
Absolutely. It's just, and from their point of view, that if you don't do it, if you don't commit that way, you're not going to take advantage of what it is that's been given to you. That's their whole thing.
If it's given away for free, you're not going to pay attention.
You're not going to
anyway.
Pay. And that's true. I mean, at all levels, yeah, people are like that, and there needs to be a money commitment. But that's not really, you know, answering the question, the deeper question of people. Right livelihood is part of the whole of the path. It's
right.
Part of life. It's part of the path. And people, these people that you're talking about, absolutely are in tune with right livelihood. And they're doing what, I mean, Krishnadas is a good example. He has the biggest audience.
Huge.
Out there. I mean, alongside of Ram Dass. And he's always, from the very beginning, you know, knocking down. I mean, he charges less than anybody on the circuit that can pull in that has that kind of demand. So he is thinking about this. This is, and you know, so people do think about this and take whatever action they can. But it's the same as everything else, the grist for the mill. It's just, that's something that you're dealing with. You're dealing with with greed, lust, anger, attachment, all of it, right? On a day-to-day
yes.
basis. This is just part of that. So it's not like separate, oh shit, I got to really worry about, I'm going to make a living, but people, I'm spiritual, so I don't want people to think I'm really money-grubbing, and the teachings are all for free. You know, people aren't, they're doing what they need to do for right livelihood,
right.
And they're dealing with the issues that come to them and stick. That's part of being a teacher, is taking the teachings.
Do you think that there is a level of income that is unethical
in this particular
in all areas? Does it ever get, do you think it ever,
absolutely, these people are getting multi-millions of dollars, I mean, on Wall Street and elsewhere, you know, CEOs, all of that. Yeah, I don't think it should be legislated in any way, but I do think, yeah, there is a morality issue there. That, I mean, but look at people. Some people are doing, you know, Gates is doing something
right.
with his money. Buffett is doing something. And Soros, there are people that are actively doing something. And there are other people, maybe they aren't so active, and their level of compassion and caring isn't, you know, and God, what to do, you know?
This is what I want to get to. I was at the retreat the first day, and I was feeling on top of the world. I just finished this tour. I'm in this beautiful place with my friends. I'm so happy, and I'm just, for a little second, from, I think it lasted at least 5 hours, I was really feeling that thing that you were talking about, like, man, this is incredible. And then I thought, as I'm looking at the ocean here in this beautiful room that you've put me in, I thought to myself, and it was really intense, I'm like, how can you enjoy this when...
Love that.
How can you enjoy this when countless people are really fucked? And then Lama Suryadas was speaking, and that is kind of one of the things he said, is that how are you really going to have a great time when you realize that the entire planet is filled with all these different types of suffering? How do you enjoy the momentary bursts of vacation time or whatever when that thing is zinging around in the back of your head somewhere?
I thought it was a different guilt trip. That's why I said I love it. The other guilt trip about being at the resort and doing spiritual practices while you're walking by the ocean and feeling like, what, this is a joke.
Yeah.
I've been put on here. This is just to make me feel good, something, because it can't be real. I love that guilt trip. I love this other one. Yeah.
It's bittersweet.
Truth is, on what you're talking about, is these people that come here and all the teachers, right, by virtue of being here and going through some transformation of sorts from one degree to another,
yes,
they can go back. And the idea is, maybe it's going to be a little bit of a different situation with whoever they speak to on a day-to-day basis, whoever they do business with on a day-to-day basis, whoever they might have more compassion for on a day-to-day basis. That's the purpose of the retreat, is that lending that vibration to people, not lending, but making available that vibration to people to allow them to be more open and more caring and more compassionate. All of us, not teachers as well. That's the idea of this thing.
It's like a pollination.
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, we're all gathering, and this force from the one that is the reason why we're gathering, the guru of Ram Dass and me, that you well know, Neem Karoli Baba, we're gathering around that energy. And through that energy, there's a certain opening that obviously is happening. It's been happening on a year-to-year basis, and it's quite amazing what's happening. And when that happens, that's the opportunity for people to open up outside of just being here, and that is happening as well. So that the other thing is more of a fun thing. Walking around here, you know, we should be walking on barefoot on fires. We should be in a bed of nails. We should have some real tapasya.
That's it.
This is insane. That's good. It. I like that.
What do you mean you like it?
I like playing with that whole duality.
The idea
of being in this incredibly knocked out beachfront property, beautiful ocean, and yet at the same time, there is, you know, they're back there right now. There's a session going on with Suryadas, Lama Suryadas. Intense Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantra, the Tibetan mantra. Intense. I mean, he's got it. When I walked in that room, the whole thing was like flying. It was amazing.
Wow.
So at the core, that's really all that's going on. This is just a come on to make people relax so that they can receive whatever's been given.
Right. You're not, but this particular branch of the philosophy of this satsang does not seem to be to have much asceticism in it.
Not at all. We never happened. When we were with Maharaji in India, he put us up in beautiful place. You know, we'd like go see him in Allahabad, and there was a lot of us, like 30, 40, 50 people, and we would be put up in how beautiful places around where he was staying and fed, and I'm taken care of. No, he wasn't like, okay, go, you know, you've seen in India, sleep on the side of the street, even around an ashram, or sleep in a dhamsala that doesn't have has nothing, whatever. we were taken care of, and he continues to do that.
And so the severity that you hear of these different practices, and there's so, for example, even Vipassana, the long sitting retreats, or the there's so many varieties. I did an interview with this artist, Jim Woodring, who practices some form of Vedanta, is what he called it. I'm not sure the specifics, but he said that, you know, he actually mentioned, I think, Jack Kornfield. He's like, you know, Jack Kornfield and Ram Dass, these are teachers who kind of put their arm around you and they're your friend. My teacher isn't like that. Our relationship is, I'm your teacher. That's it. I'm not your friend. I'm going to show you these techniques, and this is our relationship. So do you find that there's a hierarchy of practice? In other words, are there some forms of practice that are more efficient, some forms of practice that are considered to be to take longer to reach that state that you're talking about?
Yeah, it depends who you are.
Right.
That's why there's so many great practices. It's one for everybody's liking. I mean, it's amazing what's out there, especially you can through the net, you can get to anything. Listen, like for instance, Zen Buddhism and Zen sitting, I mean, that's... There's no object of the attention. There's just awarenesses of the object. And it is very difficult. And you sit there and you get whacked if you move.
Right.
It's like that. Roshi Joan Halifax. You remember what she said in the podcast to us? She said, she was saying, you know, when this bhakti's nice, you know, you have a subject and an object and you worship that object until you merge with it. But eventually, you're going to have to deal with the unmanifest, non-dual.
Right.
You're going to have to be there. I mean,
that's it.
So I said to her, yeah, okay. In about 500 billion years, I'll meet you over there, Roshi. Okay?
You're in no hurry to go into that state.
But by the way, I'm thinking back about the this. I don't know why this just came up, but now I'm feeling bad.
What?
About being... what did they say I was?
Gruff.
Gruff. About being gruff. Am I gruff with you? Now I'm feeling horrible.
No, you're no more gruff than any of my good friends are gruff with me. It seems to just be one white people who know me tend to react. I like it. I don't know. Yeah. No, whenever I get those messages, it's annoying to me because it's annoying because for a lot of different reasons. One's because I know you and you're the least gruff person I know. And two, it's annoying because what I see happening there is the idea of trying to make a teacher meet your expectations of the way a person's supposed to act. Uh-huh. I'm guilty of this, of course. I've run into teachers in the past. One of my favorite archetypes, I guess you would call it, is the beggar who comes to the house, and you give the beggar some money or whatever, and the beggar turns out to be the angel Gabriel or whatever. And this is like a story. The God comes to your house disguised as a person, and the disguise is usually in one way or another the complete opposite of what you would think that person would be like. And it's a chance. And the person comes, and because of your expectations, your judgment, the hierarchy that you've placed on the universe of here's the way a spiritual teacher should look and here's the way a spiritual teacher should act, you miss the whole goddamn thing. And I've done that myself many times. I mean, I've never been visited by angels, but there have been times when I've been around the coolest people on earth, and I only realize how cool they are 5 years later, where I'm like, my God, that was an amazing person, but I was too blind to see it. So this is, to me, something that is very frustrating, because it seems like a lot of people are inventing barriers or something between themselves and the teaching just to try to keep it at arm's
distance,
length.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just fear and anxiety. And just having, you know, all the habitual tendencies we grow up with, we have a tough time in the West. Not that they don't in the East. They have also other kinds of mishugana shit going on in, for instance, in India, and family life and culture and all that, taboos and just wacky shit. You know, they don't even have a word for menstrual cycle, menstruation.
Why?
Because, you know, this is something cheap away. We don't know. It's just
right.
Something. Oh, it's just monthly time. Some bullshit. My wife told me, because she treats people over there.
Yeah, see, this is the thing.
I mean, it's all kind of bullshit culture, but we really don't. We have a lot of neurotic stuff that we grow up in, you know?
You know, I once, and I talk about him every once in a while, I met like a, what I would consider a semi-actualized being in Boston. And me and my friend talk about him sometimes, and sometimes we half jokingly call him our guru. But this person was wild, man. Like, this was a wild, wild genius. He wasn't like anyone I've ever met, and he wasn't going to behave. He wasn't a behaved person. And but he was always teaching, teaching from, not like, here, let me show you how to meditate, teaching from, look at how connected I am to the moment, not saying it, living it. So it's a person who is living. You're around them. It's like, man, this guy is in every second is living. And what a temper he had. Man, he would sometimes just fly into the most insane fits of anger and then immediately be fine again, laughing and totally cool. And none of it was scary.
Was this in an asylum you saw?
He wasn't in an asylum. But he was brilliant.
Anybody who's like flipping out like that, well, I guess semi-actualized, he was in the moment most of the time, but sometimes he'd flip out.
It was, even when he flipped out, it was really funny, and it never turned into anything. But there was the element of like an unbalanced nature there.
Yeah,
but
right.
I'm only bringing this up because I think it's a thing that I've got to be more careful about, which is... I have so many expectations for the way a person's supposed to be if they're going to be dishing out any kind of life wisdom. Mm. So I could write that down. I have rules. I'm realizing that now. I have specific rules.
Put a rule. That's terrific. Put a rule book together.
Do you want to hear some of them?
Yeah.
No dreadlocks.
Oh, God. No. What is the thing around dreadlocks?
See? No reason. That's my point.
Oh, it's nothing. It's
none
just
of it's
a rule.
Real. It's all my own bullshit.
Oh.
But I've realized that...
Where does it come from, though? By the way, tomorrow, are you looking forward to your analyzation session with Ram Dass?
Yes, I can't wait. Yes. I'm very excited.
It's just therapy, yes.
But do you see what I'm saying? There's a whole... Okay, so...
Whoever thought of dreadlocks as being... I mean, think of something else. White people you don't want. Something.
I could go into a whole list of things. But so they are finding out, and they've already found out, that we're surrounded by this quantum soup, right? That's what they say. And it's really hard to understand, but the idea is that the way we perceive the universe, not only is that completely not the way the universe functions, it's a million billion miles away from the way the universe really is. That in the same way that there's a great essay this quantum physicist wrote, and he said, if you look at your desktop computer and you look at your folders on the desktop, those are not folders on a desktop computer. That's just lines and lines of computer code that's been placed in these symbols that are familiar to you because it helps you navigate your way through the computer. If you had to type the code in or understand machine language or ones and zeros, obviously it would be an incredibly inefficient system. So in the same way, human reality is not what reality is, but it's just something that our nervous system has evolved to only see specific things that help us. Everything else tuned out because it's just too much shit to deal with, right? So in the same way, this system of programming yourself to only see certain people as being the messengers of the divine and cutting out all the other ones because whatever the reason may be, they smoke too much weed. They're too fat. They're too thin. They got angry. Yeah. They smell funny. I don't like the way they walk. Can you believe they were in jail? They have too much money. They don't have enough money. All of these...
I have an antidote.
What's the antidote?
For you.
Please.
There is a system for people with high anxiety like you that actually retrains your brain and deletes the habitual tendencies that you're talking about.
What is it?
What is it?
What's this?
You want everything?
Yeah.
I did a podcast with somebody who has this fantastic system. Okay, now challenging to remember the name of the system, but it's something around neuroplasticity. Neurosculpting.
Okay.
Is the name of it. And you can it's a methodology to actually go in and be able to change your brain patterns through a meditative process and something this person invented. And actually, so that you will not have a phobia, for instance, about a person with dreadlocks being a teacher.
By the way, for all of you out there who have dreadlocks, I hope you understand. You're all beautiful, sweet, wonderful people. This is my own fucked up shit. I just bring this stuff around people like Raghu because I inevitably get some kind of help, and it's fun to do it in front of you guys. So dreadlock folks out there, and I know there's a great many of you, please understand, I am the asshole. You are beautiful. Keep growing those sweet, thick, patchouli-soaked dreads.
Oh, God, you got to put a hit in right at the end there. You couldn't just let it go, right? Jesus, that's ungenerous.
So neuroplasticity.
Yeah.
So you reprogram your mind.
Yeah, you don't. Through the methodology. Well, I mean, in reality, I mean, this person seems to have. She got hit by lightning, okay?
Yeah.
And she started having seizures, big time. Anxiety into seizures. And so she needed to do something. So she found a methodology to retrain her brain. I mean, go mind rolling. Take a look, and you'll see neurosculpting, retraining your brain.
All right, okay. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
So everyone, everything's a teaching, right? Everything, as you're saying, everything's a teaching, and yet we still need to be able to discern the good teachings from the bad teachings, the charlatans from the true teachers, because otherwise you're going to end up in a steel cage somewhere in a farm in Alabama with pigs snorting around, covered in weird tattoos, training to start a race war. You know, you can get sucked down the wrong tube, man. So what about that?
Then you're supposed to get sucked down that tube for a while.
You don't want to get. What if the tube ends in a garbage disposal, man? You don't want to get. So we need.
Okay, that's terrible. And
We need to discern. And so
yes.
Here is a thing inside humans, which is don't touch a hot stove. Hot stove burns. Don't jump off the third floor of your apartment building. That's too high to jump. These are basic things, right? But in the same way, this applies to human beings. So if this person is acting in a way that seems to go outside of my understanding of the way a teacher should act, avoid them at all costs. How can you tell the difference between resistance and honest to God, great intuition?
Jeez. Tough question.
Yeah.
It's not really tough. I mean, I can only think of my own experience. Honestly, a lot of people don't have great discrimination.
Right.
And they're easily convinced one way or the other, or they can't find that place where they really know deep down what's right, what's not. So it's tough. If you can, my own experience, I mean, it's as stupid, new agey, hippie as it sounds.
Say it.
You know, my story with Ram Dass. They asked me to promote him on the radio.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what Ram Dass was, but I knew Leary and Alpert, and they told me that. And I said, oh, great. And I came over I said, send a tape. I listened to the tape. Just what he said and how he said it, I trusted him. And then, but I said, okay, I got to meet you. Okay, so he said, well, come over. I'm over here. You know, this was in Montreal where I'm from. And I went over there and opened the door, and he just contacted you. You know those big blue saucer eyes of his?
Yes.
And he was empty of himself, right? Which is, if you want to know the best way to know, if you meet somebody, that they're empty of themselves in a moment.
What does that look like?
They're only caring about you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They don't give a shit about themselves.
And it's not an act. They're not doing a sales technique to like be...
No.
What does that look like, only caring about you? Like, they're just listening to you completely. They're... What does it look like?
He was just dropped into a moment without... He didn't care about what I looked like. He didn't care about what my voice sounded like. He didn't care of any of those things.
Right. That's cool.
It was just giving.
That's really cool.
So in that moment, I 100 billion% trusted him when I met him. I trusted him when I heard him, but when I met him, and that was the end. Until I met Neem Karoli Baba, when I realized, oh, that's the shit. He was just reflecting that intense presence in the moment. Yeah, unconditional love, whatever you want to call it. So I had that trust.
It's a kind of, would you call it an output, like an outflow?
He was being it, and the being it created a wonderful, like going into a hot tub when you get in and you just can completely relax. So it's being in that moment.
And you, at that moment, you are receiving.
Yeah, I mean, it was like I walked into the pool.
Right.
The pool was there. I could have not walked into it. I could have, I guess if I was nervous or uptight about somebody who's just, you know, some people get uptight and they're a little like deer in the headlights in the presence of that thing, which we'll just call that thing there.
I feel like that. I get completely frozen in it because you don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, and I've seen it multiple times with Maharaji and Siddhima and this other being that I know. You're talking intuition. I trusted him, but I trusted myself. And I never thought twice about nothing. I want what you got. So where can I go get it? And, you know, it took a while for him to allow that to happen.
How did you get to be like that? That's an interesting character trait, because most of us, man, the brakes come on instantly. No matter what's going on, the brakes come on. How come the brakes didn't come on for you?
That's a good question. What? But it's karma. It has. I mean, karma is inevitable. That you're going to meet somebody and you're pulled so strongly you don't think about it. But there was people like me who did what you did. Well, I'm not supposed to go. He told me not to go or whatever. They did not grab the thing by the throat and say, I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, but there was, like Krishnadas, he grabbed Ram Dass. He said, I want to go. Hook me up with who I can write to. And he gave him KK's number. Address, whatever. So there, what is that thing? It's really
courage. It's courage.
No, it wasn't courage. It's what you've been talking about. It's just knowing this is right for me, and I am going. It's all okay. So I was also that. I knew through acid that there was another reality, right. Not the one, right? I got it, like we all did. I wanted that. So when this thing came through Ram Dass, I knew that that was going to lead me to that thing.
But it's this idea of I'm going to India. I am not going to worry about making money. I'm not going to worry about my job. I'm not going to worry about my family.
Wait, I was 20-odd years old. Come on.
20-year-olds. 20-year-olds.
24 years old.
20-year-olds are freaking out, man. Just they're worried, too, about their... A lot... Most
okay,
folks...
Okay, well, I was... Okay. Then I was a hippie. I was a little... You know, I was much wilder. I was against the establishment. I didn't give a shit about... I was running a radio station, though. I made a bunch of money, and I could go to India for a couple of years. I mean, that's really the reality.
Well, I mean, you've got... It's like, when I think of the... I'm going to make up a normal person, even though there's no such thing, but when I think of maybe the reality tunnel many people are living in. It's a reality tunnel, mostly in consensus reality, where they've heard about all these doors leading out of the tunnel. And each of those doors, one of the doors is psychedelics. One of the doors is meditation. One of the doors is finding a guru. One of the doors is just giving everything up and wandering like Emerson into the nothingness. But they just sit there for their whole lives, never opening these doors, just looking at them like, oh yeah, that's a path. And then hearing stories of people who have traveled out of those doors. But a lot of us are just never going to open those doors and dive in. And I think that's kind of what's special about you guys, is that you just jumped out of the plane. We're not jumping out of the plane. I'm not going to go meet some guru in India. Are you kidding? I will not do that. I will never be able to do that.
Are you crazy?
I don't know.
What do you mean you'll never do it? How could you? I'm being gruff now. I'm really paranoid about this gruff thing.
Well, good. Well, look, here's the thing. Here's why. Because it's too much to deal with. I like my life. I don't want to get sucked into
You did go to India, though.
I didn't meet any gurus.
Let's just, your karma wasn't right for you.
Well, the karma, so we have a karmic hierarchy, but what I mean is, here's what I mean. There has to be another way that doesn't involve a relationship with a teacher. There has to be a way, because here's the thing. We hear all these teachings that you guys give us and many other people give us. They all point in the direction of the moment, the now. Just this. This is it. This is it. Right now with you. You and I having this wonderful conversation. This is it. So the pilgrimage to meet the saint, the pilgrimage to meet the guru, the pilgrimage to meet the teacher is romantic and beautiful, but isn't it ultimately considered unnecessary? Isn't it unnecessary now? Aren't we all?
I don't think there's any broad rule about it necessary or unnecessary. Different people will tell you all sorts of different things in different times.
Yes.
We're in a particular time, you know, the Kali Yuga, they say.
The Kali Yuga.
Yeah. That time, they say the only way through is the repetition of the mantra, Maha Mantra. So,
you know, I got to say real quick,
which I completely agree with.
I don't buy the Kali Yuga thing. I used to buy into that. Now I don't buy it. I think that there's one moment that's happening there's just one moment.
It's okay. We would never know. It's just stuff out of Hinduism. What do we know? It doesn't matter whatsoever. I'm just saying they say it's the Kali Yuga, but we don't really care one way or the other because it's not affecting our day-to-day lives whatsoever, right? Let me go back to something. Because you're talking about, do we need a teacher or not?
Not a teacher. I think we definitely need teachers.
Oh, what a guru.
I'm saying, yes.
Guru.
So what I'm saying is, do...
A physical guru.
A physical guru, in other words...
What about a non-physical guru?
Well, that's... I'll take that.
You'll have that.
Well,
okay.
No, but because that's manageable. But
I know that's what my wife said.
But this is where I'm trying to bring it around.
Yeah.
I want it to be according to my way.
Oh, right.
Do you understand? and this is what's ruining everything. And
for you.
Yes.
Cuz you yes.
Cuz this is
how Well, you know, life. You're going to can you on this well, you're here and there you're on a path that is certainly, you've joined the little tribe, and the path is the path of bhakti. So it's also the path of getting busted big time on every level for every conceptual thing you think is real, right?
Right.
You're just going to get busted. You're going to get busted on all this stuff. You know, if you think
What do you mean busted?
Busted mentally. You're going to get stuff presented to you that breaks apart your conceptions. One way or the other. It could be through meditation. It could be through a teacher saying something, a book someone told you to get, a dream that you might... There's a billion ways for this stuff to get dissolved by the thing you don't believe everyone needs and has, which is a guru. That absolutely happens. I am completely... You know what, though?
What?
Trust. I keep thinking about trust. And I get, you know, you're asking me, well, why did you have the gumption to go over in India? It's crazy. Lose your job, whatever. No money. God knows what's going to happen. You had that. And I don't know. I guess I just was really one pointed. But ultimately, it was trust. I trusted him so implicitly that if he was saying, I got my life was completely transformed by this being, which he said, Ram Dass.
Yes.
I trusted that so implicitly, I went there. I didn't care where that was. And, you know, even another thing, like Krishnadas, you know Krishnadas,
yes,
right? And you know how close we are and have been for a long time since, yes, going to India. And he takes all kinds of different teachings with different teachers.
Yes.
And he meets them a lot because of him traveling around the world doing what he does. And he's at times told me, you must see this teacher. This teacher is just blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
I don't even care. If he tells me to go see that, I'm there. Because I trust him 100% that whatever he would recommend, or a book, could be just a book.
But are you guys, so, can I ask you this? This is the skeptical part of me. When I think about it, when I think about guru, what's it called? What's the path, the guru path called?
Guru Kripa.
Guru Kripa.
Guru's grace.
This is what I think. And
yeah,
I say it with all due respect. Hope this doesn't seem blasphemous, but it seems sometimes to me like people are using other people to get high spiritually. You hear about this person, he's putting out the good stuff, and then you go out, you meet the person, you get blasted on whatever the energy is that they're dispensing, and then you go back to your life, you come down.
And you become the same asshole.
Yes, just in the same way that the complaint with psychedelics that Ram Dass.
Yeah, same thing.
About,
yeah, you're saying thing. That.
Yes, I'm saying okay. That it appears to be a form of interpersonal intoxication that comes from being in the presence of a person who is either emitting some kind of energy consciousness or has figured out a way to make other people feel like he's emitting that kind of consciousness. So,
Jesus, what a dark vision he has.
That's the vision, Raghu. That's the vision. And I think, I don't think I'm...
That happens all the time. There are people out there with a lot of power that are gathering around them more devotees,
yes,
to support more of what they still have.
That's
as
it.
A desire system going on. Absolutely.
Jim Jones.
Well, Jim Jones is gross. I mean, that's bullshit. I mean, there was many. Yeah, Rajneesh. Try Rajneesh.
Okay.
That's at least somewhat more subtle, because the stuff that he was putting out, the philosophy of Tantra, was all Vedic stuff. It was as real as anything else. It's just he obviously still had desire system with all the cars and the this and the that, whatever he was doing. But so, again, it's a shit detector. And if many people get involved with a guru that isn't totally done, they don't know it, they may find out eventually, and they leave. There may be hurt and bad feelings. There may be a lot of bullshit that goes on. But obviously, yes, that person needed that teaching.
Have you ever had that happen to you? Where you did you ever find yourself caught in the gravity of someone who later turned out to be not the real deal?
I wasn't caught because, fortunately for me, when I was really young, I met Neem Karoli Baba. So that was a rudder. So even if I did run into teachers later on that were caught, and I maybe didn't know in the beginning, I just took it as my own, okay, then that discrimination button was off on that one, or whatever. I needed to go through it.
Right.
So I always had that rudder of awareness of that being that was completely not involved in duality. He was living in the non-dual Neem Karoli Baba.
Yes.
So I had that as a rudder. So whenever anything happened, it was obviously something I needed to work through. And, you know, there's been tons of stuff, not just that, over all these decades.
So you have met...
Yep.
...unscrupulous folk. Like, yep. You don't have to say any names, but what's an example of when you realize, oh, shit, this isn't the right person for me?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to give the name.
Of course not.
Nobody would know. It is somebody in India. But the reality was, yeah, he was not, he was not representing what it was that he was espousing.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And we didn't know that till about a year after. He was, you know, and it was like, okay, you know, whatever, there was a lesson there, I don't know. But I had the advantage that it wasn't like I wasn't looking to him as a guru. He was a teacher.
Right.
And period. And so I wasn't at all devastated or anything like that. It was just, oh, okay, next.
Right.
So it wasn't big. Now, there are people who take that person on as a finished being, a siddha, which is, there's very few of them,
right.
Christ, Buddha, right? And it's somebody who's not that. And then it's a difficult road, you know, and there's nothing to do. People got to go through what they got to go through. And that's just the reality. Every individual has something different to go through. And look at you, you're here. And this is great. Tomorrow, this will be chapter two, folks, of the Duncan Trussell.
I get to interview Ram Dass again.
Therapy.
Chat,
yeah,
with Ram Dass.
Yeah, he gets to chat with Ram Dass, and just, this is, bring this up, your fear about the discriminating properly with a guru and thinking that it's not necessary. Why would it be necessary?
Or it just doesn't appeal to me.
Doesn't appeal. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, it appeals. We have a second longer. It appeals to you, and it worked, and you're connected, and you guys are all in your own ways putting out this beautiful energy. But there has the difficulty I have in the particular circuit. It's a spiritual circuit that gets created with a guru. It's, you have the transmitter and the receiver merges with the transmitter, but eventually the receiver goes back to being a receiver and always thinks about the symbol that represents the divine consciousness. But I would rather have no symbol. I would rather have everything be the symbol. Instead of having to make the pilgrimage to go meet the teacher, to meet the guru, I don't want that. I want to completely remove any kind of geophysical. I don't want to have to get on a plane, man. I want to do
You don't have to get on a plane.
I want to do it right now.
I mean, that's silly.
I want it right now. I want the idea, at least the fantasy, to exist in my mind that every single person on planet Earth at any moment, whenever they're ready, can open up their third eye, can fully realize their true state of non-individuated consciousness, and it isn't dependent on any person, place, or thing. That's my fantasy.
Yeah, you got to talk to Ram Dass about that tomorrow. Put it on the list.
Okay, I'll write it down.
Yes.
But your answer. What do you, is that possible, or is that just a dream?
Anything is possible. There are beings who did exactly that. Ramana Maharshi at 16 years old said, I got to find out what this is all about.
Yes.
I'm going to lie down and I'm going to die. I'm going to ask, who am I? And until, I don't care. I won't eat, nothing. And he realized who he was, the
yes.
true nature. And how many gazillion billion lifetimes, or he had been that for a long time and he just needed that little thing to awaken from previous lives? We have no idea. But we do have an idea that it's obviously extraordinarily rare, so I wouldn't count on it if I was you.
There was no internet back then. But it's true. No, what I mean is the mythology of the spiritual journey, the mythology of the spiritual path, of this long time frame that it takes, and the climbing up the mountains and bowing at the feet of the master, and then years and years pass, and maybe you have some glimmering realization before you collapse in your hut and get wrapped up by other devotees and put in a cave somewhere and never thought about again. I think it might be another trap where people start thinking, oh yes, if I do this or that for this certain amount of time, that's when it's going to happen. And oh, I've got to go through all these lives. We don't have time to go through a billion lifetimes. Probably three more generations are going to incarnate on this planet before Trump destroys the whole thing, Raghu. So there's no time to have all these countless incarnations. isn't it possible? Well,
I'm sure you're not an expert on that subject. There's no time, but we have no idea of what time really is. We have no idea about the different possibilities that are out there of taking incarnations on completely different planes of consciousness. And we have no idea about nothing. So we just got to worry about our little piece of real estate that's in front of us, like us right now. And I mean, not kidding aside, or kidding aside, you came into this. I don't care about any of, you know how I am.
Yes.
I don't care about anything. I care about absolutely being as free as I can get.
Yes.
So I can really be of some use to whoever's around me and not caught.
Right.
The way that one is caught in so many different things day to day.
Yes.
That's it. I'm only interested in that. And
we agree. We're both on the same page there.
Yeah. And so something is happening to you in this scene.
For sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's, you're like, just told me yesterday how the moment really opened up for you and has been opening up at different times of
Definitely.
Just inhabiting it and being happy. There's nothing else, folks, out there.
That's it.
Duncan is a reformed guy.
Reformed? That's a terribly boring term.
I know.
I don't feel reformed, but I do think that that's what you just said. That's the essence of the whole thing. Yep. It's just that moment.
Yeah.
The whole guru game, the whole...
It's all just mental bullshit. So, but, you know, on the other hand, I know absolutely for a fact in my life and in people that are close to me who have, there is always a something of some sort from the one that is doing, that is the guide, guru, guide, whatever you want. And you don't need to know it physically. In your case, though, you bumped into this. I mean, you can't deny it's a something there. That Maharaji, that's localized there. That something seems to be entering in through the portal of all the people just being together, and it's just called the moment.
I'll take it. It's a start to a long conversation we have to keep having. Thank you so much, Raghu, for being on the show again. I love you too, and thanks for letting me be here with you. It's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and a big thanks to the sweeties over at squarespace.com for sponsoring this episode. Go to Squarespace, use offer code Duncan to get 10% off a brand new website, and if you get the chance, bookmark our Amazon portal, and don't forget to go spit in a hole today or any day during June. I love you guys, and I'll see you real soon. Hare Krishna.